The story is so scary and unprecedented in maybe in American history, certainly in my lifetime, that I hope people understand what is going on here. So I want to make something clear, just factually. Did he enter the Capitol, or was he only on the lawn?
He was only on the lawn in what law enforcement said was a restricted area, where he was not supposed to be. He did not enter the Capitol. He did not assault a police officer. He had no weapons on him. He did nothing wrong except be a supporter of Donald Trump.
And he is now in prison for how long?
Throughout his trial, the judge said. They legitimately said, Dennis, both prosecutors, so all of the prosecution is running through the D.C. U.S. Attorney's Office, which is scary because those are the same people who have sort of gone after the president, but we know one after Roger Stone and Mike Flynn, very least. So all the prosecutions are running through there. Prosecutors and a judge legitimately said that because he said in his FBI interview after he was arrested that the election was stolen, that he therefore would not abide by any of the laws of the United States. The judge said, well, then you must think that I'm part of this rigged system, so you won't abide by any of my orders, and now continue to hold him in jail without bond. Now, Dennis, he's one of at least two dozen people who have been charged with various crimes, mostly misdemeanor property charges, who are being held without bond. Some of them even transferred to Washington, D.C., away from their homes, awaiting trial, because the mere fact that they were at the Capitol, either inside or outside January 6th, makes them a threat to democracy, I've heard, and, of course, the country. It's very scary.
I'm in the rare position of being speechless. I'm not being cute or rhetorical. Words elude me that this is happening in America. This is police state. That's police state tactics. There's no other way of speaking about it, especially when one realizes that today murderers are allowed to leave prison. Charged murderers, correct?
That is correct. And of course, we know all of the Black Lives Matter and Antifa rioters who tore up our nation's capital for months, these very same prosecutors and judges not only refused to arrest them, but dropped almost all charges, as I write in my article with links to the Washington Post backing that up. Dennis, you know, we hesitated to use the word political prisoner because, you know, D.C. is worried about some guy in Russia and upsetting Vladimir Putin when we have far greater issues here. But I really encourage your listeners and you as well. I link in my piece the January 12th press conference by the assistant director of the D.C. FBI office and acting attorney general. People need to watch what these men say.
Good. Hold on with that. Don't forget that's what we're talking about. They are claiming that what happened was an insurrection. It's a gigantic lie. Okay? All right. First, I guess, unarmed insurrection where people take selfies at the desks of people they oppose politically. It's the selfie insurrection. All right? So that's the first lie. It's based on that. If it wasn't an insurrection, then there's nothing to really talk about. The second is that the president incited the insurrection, even though they can produce, the only thing they could produce is, he says, you got to fight for what you believe. As everybody knows, that incites riots. The Democrats never say fight for what we stand for. And it just continues along those lines. Third, they equate believing that the election was illegitimate with treason and being an insurrectionist and so on. I don't care what you believe. I don't care what my side believes or your side believes. I care the way people act. How many Democrats believe that the election was not stolen from Hillary Clinton? The whole point of the Russian collusion lie was to prove that it was an illegitimate election. Putin won. Remember? Putin, not Trump. Telling all Americans over and over and over police are racist does not lead to fatal riots, the burning down of businesses and police cars. That does not lead to that. This is a cover-up for the violence of the left. That's the way it should be regarded. I wish we had the male-female hour today. I apologize to you. I apologize to me. I apologize to males and females listening. I cannot control the events outside. I can only control how I react. And this is a time of crisis wherein my normal programming is deferred. I would love to have had a male-female hour today. I debated it to the last minute, actually. The vote was won to have regular programming 60-40. 40% of me wishes that I, well, 100% of me wishes I had done it, but 40% of me is not sure that I made the right decision. 60% is. Those of you listening in Dallas, are you aware of this? This is from CBS News. I just learned of this last night. Mark Cuban, his Mavericks become, that's the basketball team, first NBA team to cease playing national anthem before games. Why was this not reported sooner? I have to find out about this. If you're in Dallas, let me know if you knew about this and why all hell didn't break loose to somehow get him out of the Dallas Mavericks organization. This is a very bad thing. This is worse than Colin Kaepernick. Dallas Mavericks became the first NBA team and perhaps the first team in all of North American professional sports to cease playing the national anthem before games this season. Dallas has hosted 12 regular season games so far during the 2020-2021 season, along with a single preseason game, and the team didn't play the anthem before any of the contests. So when did that begin, and why is the news only coming out now? I guess, are there no fans that are aware of this? A source close to Mavericks owner Mark Cuban says the decision to not play the national anthem before games isn't because the franchise lacks love for the United States, but rather because many in the organization feel that the anthem, quote, doesn't represent them. What about the anthem is there not to be represented? Land of the free and home of the brave? Is that not who doesn't that represent? Well, it doesn't represent the left. I guess that's true. Now that I think of it, it really doesn't represent a good chunk of this country. Many in the organization feel that the anthem, quote, doesn't represent them. According to The Athletic's Shams Charania. I don't know what that is. Instead, the Mavericks reportedly want to explore other ways of representing people from all communities while also honoring the U.S. at games. Well, the breaking up of America into quote-unquote communities. It was my decision and I made it in November, Cuban said of the move, while declining further comment. There was no internal announcement about Dallas's decision, according to The Athletic's Tim Cato. Instead, team employees found out that the anthem wasn't being played when they realized it for themselves. That's a gutsy move on the part of Cuban. Doesn't take any questions. and doesn't tell anybody he's going to do it, and people just realize it over time. The NBA's other 29 teams have found ways to play the anthem without necessarily having a singer in the building, largely by using recordings, but the league itself has permitted the choice not to play it at all. Another reason to avoid the NBA. Under the unique circumstances of the season, teams are permitted to run their pregame operations as they see fit, a league spokesman told The Athletic. Interestingly enough, this actually isn't the first time in Mavericks franchise history that the team has opted against playing the national anthem. This is from a writer in the New York Times. For the club's first 16 years of existence, when it was owned by Donald Carter, God Bless America was sung instead before home games at the old Reunion Arena. The Mavericks began playing the national anthem after the team was purchased by Ross Perot in 1996. Cuban bought the Mavericks in January 2000. League rules state that players must stand for the national anthem, but those rules have not been strictly enforced in recent years. Players on every team in the Orlando bubble knelt for the anthem when the season resumed last summer. Mark Cuban supported the decision, and the league as a whole to use the Disney bubble to promote the social justice messaging such protests inspired. The Mavs have not offered comment on their long-term plans, but for the time being, the anthem will continue to be not to be played at home games in Dallas. So you can add Mark Cuban to the roster of those bit by bit undoing America. That's all. That's the only way. Who doesn't it represent? Who does the national anthem not represent? That's what I'd like to know. Well, they don't believe the nation is a nation. That there is no, for the left and destructive forces like Cuban. By the way, he's invited onto the show. They never come on. Leftists don't debate. And I am civil a debater as exists. My next fireside chat, I very rarely do this, maybe once in 50 fireside chats I have a guest, but I'm going to have a prominent atheist on. And he knows how civil I will be. Mark Cuban wouldn't come on. He wouldn't debate. So there has to be a way to make his franchise lose as much money as possible. And that would mean never watching a Mavericks game on TV and not going to games. To ask you to give up your season tickets is, I realize, asking a lot, so I'm not even saying that. But you should consider it. Remarkable young woman, 20 years old, Amala Ekpunobi. She's a member of Prager Force. She actually spoke to the board of directors of Prager University at a board meeting this week. And we're very, very happy we found you and happy you found us. We'll get to that in a moment. So just to recap, Amala is the daughter of a Nigerian father and American white mother. And they separated when she was six, and that's her that's the personal story in a nutshell. Her mother was, as a result of college, as she became a person of the left. So were you raised? You were raised on the left.
Absolutely.
Was there, when you were 15? Was there a voice in you saying, is this all correct, or you pretty much believed it?
And when I was 15, I was completely indoctrinated by the left. You could not reach me if you jumped in my head and gave me your own ideas. And I was, like I said, extremely angry. Anybody who wanted to pick a fight with me, I was there to argue, and I was there to spout the talking points and the buzzwords.
Well, here's a question I don't know if you're asked often. Did you buy the line that being a person of color, you were persecuted?
Absolutely. And it was ingrained into me from a very young age, actually. So growing up with my mother,
you grew up thinking pretty much America is systemically racist.
Yes.
And had it in for you.
Yes, absolutely.
If I'd have asked you when you were 15, so how has America's systemic racism and the universality of white prejudice against blacks, how has that actually affected you? What would you have answered?
I would not have had an answer.
I don't think any of them, them meaning people of color who believe, people of color on the left, people and whites on the left don't either. It's the greatest lie, and it's backed up with nothing. It's backed up with studies.
It is.
But not real life. It is somewhat of you'll find this of interest, I think. I've been doing radio for 35 years, and I have a lot of black listeners, which I'm delighted to say. And every so often, I will get a call about, Dennis, you don't know what it is to walk in a black person's shoes. I don't know what it is to walk in my wife's shoes. I'm not being cute. No one knows what it's like to walk in anybody else's shoes. That's the human condition. The caller doesn't know what it's like to walk in my shoes. All right. So I say, okay, and if I walked in your shoes, what would I experience? Well, tell you the truth, every day I experience racism. So I've had an answer for 35 years, and it's an honest answer. Okay, if it happens every day, what happened today? And then they say, well, day's not over. Okay, what happened yesterday? Because yesterday is over. And I've never in 35 years gotten a response from someone claiming to experience racism every day. But you wouldn't have had an answer at 15.
I would not have had an answer. And it's funny enough, I grew up in a very conservative, mostly white area in Central Florida, and I was extremely successful. I was top of my class. I graduated valedictorian, and you still would have come up to me and asked me about it, and I would have said that America was systemically racist, even though I had not experienced any of it. And that's how corrupt our media is. That's how corrupt our schooling system is. And their influence is very strong, especially with young people.
God, I love her. I do. What am I going to tell
you? Thank
you. So what happened? What did you wake up one day? Was there a theophany? Did you have a burning bush like Moses? What happened?
So what happened for me was I graduated at 17. I wasn't too keen on going straight into college, and I started working for my mother's organization as a youth organizer. And for me, my target audience was anybody from the age of 13 to 18. So I would travel around to schools and find their Democratic clubs or their left-leaning students, and I would talk to them about coming and working for the organization. And that involved going to our education seminars, getting involved with protests, going around and canvassing and door knocking. And I put myself in a position where I was a role model to young people, and they had plenty of questions for me, and they were questions that I could not answer. And I went to my superiors and I asked these questions, and I saw a lot of hate, and I got a lot of hate in return. So I had to go out and seek my own answers, and that's how I came to be a conservative.
Can you give an example? Do you remember what some of those questions might have been?
So a lot of it was, what can I do as a person to stop this racism? And can you give me examples of numbers and things like that that I can prove to people that this is happening in America? They wanted proof of what I was saying, that America is systemically racist, that we are oppressed, that we live in a patriarchal society. And I could not provide that proof to these young children.
Well, the left would give a standard answer, for example, the disproportionate number of blacks in prison. So would you have an answer to that? In other words, at 17, Would that have been a convincing response that America is systemically racist?
At 17, that would have convinced me. Hook, line, and sinker, I would have believed
it. Well, you're only 20, so we're talking about a recent change.
Yes.
So it was that you started asking questions?
Yes. So I experienced a lot of hate working for the left. I realized I was a very angry person. When I went into work each day, it felt like, okay, there are things you can and cannot say. We need to stick in that. You have to agree with everything on all sides of the spectrum or you're not with us. And there was a lot of hate, particularly for white people. And I had spoken with a supervisor and I said, you know, I'm half white. Am I supposed to hate that half of me? Am I supposed to hate the family?
Okay, so let me just say, the day you asked that, it was over.
Yes.
That is why they don't want 5-minute videos.
Yep.
It doesn't take long to burst the leftist bubble.
Yep.
We'll be back in a moment with Amala Ekpunobi. Your doctor may have enabled your loved one to die. And you'll enter a realm of cognitive dissonance. Why would a non-doctor speaks on the radio know more about how to save my beloved relative or friend than my doctor or his or her doctor? And the answer is, I don't have an agenda except to save their life. Whereas your doctor is angry that Donald Trump advocated hydroxychloroquine there, and there are other reasons, because they read the New York Times to learn about the drug and they don't read the actual literature, which I delved into, and the studies around the world. Oh, they weren't randomized double blind. No, they weren't. So what? Most studies are not. Why would you not go with an as close to completely safe a drug as possible rather than do nothing except wait to give the death-oriented ventilator at the end? Ooh, it's angering. But we'll see what happens. Maybe this will convert some people from the left, which has killed their parent with their opposition to hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, which social medium took down the Senate hearing?
YouTube.
Isn't that astonishing? A U.S. Senate hearing with doctors advocating ivermectin has been taken off YouTube.
It might have been put back up, but it was taken off.
Check if it's put back. Because people should see it. I'd be very curious about that. Mike in North Carolina, hello.
Hello, Dennis.
Hi.
I told your call screener that we share the same birthday on August the 2nd, 1948.
Holy crow. Where were you born?
How about that? I was born in Buffalo, New York, other side of the state.
Yes. All right, quickly, tell me your story.
Quickly, I had COVID, and I was pretty sick with it, but I got in, my son took me in, and I was able to get into an investigative study with a product called bamlanivimab, and it's very similar to the remdesivir that the president took, and within a week, I was feeling good enough to get going again, doing all my volunteer work.
Well, I am delighted to hear it. I don't believe that mine are the only cures. I do believe that they are cures. From the Daily Mail, out of control woke leftism from the United States is a threat to France because it, quote-unquote, attacks the nation's heritage and identity, French politicians and intellectuals say. Prominent intellectuals and academics in France, have voiced concern that out-of-control leftism, this is not from a left-wing source, to say the least, and cancel culture from the United States is threatening French identity. They are arguing that American ideas on race, gender, post-colonialism, especially those coming from U.S. universities, are undermining French society and are an attack on French heritage. Well, I would presume the American left would regard France as a white supremacist society just like the United States. Think about its colonialism in Africa and elsewhere. Non-white people. The collection of intellectuals arguing that France is being contaminated by the leftism of America, again, the source is the Daily Mail, was buoyed on last year after French President Emmanuel Macron appeared to side with them. In a speech in October on the, quote, fight against separatism, unquote, Macron warned against leaving the intellectual debate to others, as he cautioned of the certain social science theories entirely imported from the United States. The left poisons everything it touches, and that includes other countries, obviously. His education minister, Jean-Michel Blanquet, also warned in October that there is, quote, a battle to wage against an intellectual matrix from American universities. The debate came to a head this week after the new director of the Paris Opera, Alexander Neef, released a 66-page report on diversity at the Paris Opera in which he vowed to diversify staff and to ban blackface. It came after five black members of the ballet company circulated an open letter among the Paris Opera's 1,800 employees last summer calling for greater diversity. Neef was targeted for the decision by far-right leader Marine Le Pen and by French newspaper Le Monde, which said he, quote, soaked up American culture for 10 years while he worked in Toronto. That's interesting that Le Monde even attacked the head of the French Opera. Le Monde is at the very least liberal. It has the prestige in France that the New York Times undeservedly has in the United States. This month also saw the publication of a book by social scientists Stéphane Bird and Gérard Noiriel, in which they claimed that race is a bulldozer that destroys other subjects. They added to the New York Times that they did not believe race should not be studied as an academic subject in France, as the secular government does not recognize it. It follows tension over protests against police violence last summer in France, sparked as they were in the U.S. by the death in police custody of George Floyd. By the way, you can tell whether a writer cares about truth or not in the way they describe the death of George Floyd. They say murdered. They are abusing the term journalist. They don't know at all that he was murdered. They don't even know that he was killed by the officer. And they certainly don't know that his death, if he was killed, was caused by racism. So they correctly put it, the death in police custody of George Floyd. Well, this is a very interesting article that they feel that the poison is coming from the American West. Historian Pierre-André Taguif argued that the American-style black question was a totally artificial importation to France. He said it was all driven, ready? Are you ready? I have a smile. That a French intellectual would say this. It was all driven by hatred of the West as a white civilization. That's correct. It's hatred of the West. That's correct. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has got to go. Jesse Jackson, 30 years ago or so, marching at Stanford with other leftists. Straight white male, that's the culprit to condemn and the enemy to eliminate. This is from a French professor in France. I have said now for some time that it's a phenomenon. It's the English-speaking countries that are sickest. I don't know the reason. I hate not knowing the reason. That's my big passion, is to understand why. Why Australia, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, Canada, the United States have more suppression of free speech than other Western countries? Why is that? People could be jailed. People were imprisoned for being on the Capitol lawn. People have their house invaded by armed FBI agents for being at the Capitol. Did this happen to any of the Antifa or BLM rioters? Any? But he sounds the alarm, that's why his book is called False Alarm, with regard to what it would take, for example, to become, what is the Joe Biden anticipation by 2050?
That will be net zero, that you will basically not be using any fossil fuels or any greenhouse gases, and the few ones that you will be emitting, you will be compensating by sucking them out of the atmosphere as well.
So tell us, what is wrong with that ambition?
So, Dennis, there's two things wrong. One is that it's being presented as this end of the world. This is what scares our kids and what makes everyone believe that this could literally be the end of humanity, that global warming is really that dangerous. It is not. And the UN climate panel, the gold standard of climate research, tells us so. They tell us that the impact of global warming will be negative, yes, but, you know, say in the 2070s, the cost of global warming will be equivalent of somewhere between 0.2 and 2% of GDP. So that means each one of us will feel 0.2 to 2% less well off than we otherwise would have. But remember, by then, we'll be 363% as rich as we are today. So instead of being 363%, we'll only be 356% as rich as we are today. Yes, that's a problem. No, it's not the end of the world. That matters because if we understand this is not the end of the world, it's a problem, one of many problems we have to fix. We also understand we shouldn't throw everything in the kitchen sink at this problem. We should be careful not to actually waste more resources than what we're the problem that we're trying to fix. And unfortunately, Biden has decided, he said that he wants to, let's see if that actually happens, he wants to spend $500 billion every year for the next 4 years on tackling climate change. That's 13% of the federal revenue. That's a lot of money. And the net impact will be pretty much zero in terms of impact on global warming. And that's why I'm raising the alarm, simply saying, look, we got to be careful with our resources. It's not like we're flush with money. If we don't spend this money well, it means that we leave the future less well off than it otherwise could have been.
When you present the data, it's just angering. I've read a lot of what you've written, and I may have missed it, or you may simply not have addressed it. So I'll ask you, what is the propelling, what propels people like Joe Biden and others to this suicidal mission of a society that is completely fossil fuel free within 30 years? Bjorn Lomborg is my guest. I'll get his response as soon as we return. $500 billion a year for the next three. We are just, my friends, we are bequeathing to the next generation dollar bills that are Monopoly money. You know, I've often said, almost every day, in fact, that the left destroys everything it touches, and that while conservatives build and liberals build, the left destroys, which is a fact. But there is one thing that the left does manufacture: hysteria. No, nobody does it as well. And that's all this is about. The president denied for 77 days that he lost. So what? He's not allowed the freedom. If you think it's absurd, he doesn't have the freedom to say absurdities. Did he do anything to block the next president from coming in? Did he bring in armed forces? Who brought in armed forces to Washington, D.C.? And why are they still there, in fact? By the way, are they really building a fence around the Capitol? Is that... It's not clear. How disgusting. This manufactured hysteria. It's like the manufactured hysteria about white supremacy. So did you know that Facebook has announced this crisis of free speech is the greatest of such in American history? Facebook has just announced it. Well, not just, probably. When did it announce this? It's not going to take any ads for the recall of Governor Newsom of California. You know when it was announced? But obviously recently. Now, think about that. They are given this license, as it were, to be immune from any lawsuits, with the deal being then you have to be a conduit for all information. I mean, we don't expect you to allow a videoed rape on Facebook. We don't expect you to allow how to manufacture an atomic bomb, but without such clear exceptions, people are free to express their opinions, but they're not. Why can't there be an ad on Facebook for the recall of the governor of California? Which reminds me to remind you that you can go... We sent in ours yesterday, by the way. Just for the record. It said you had to sign in black or blue ink. So do you think my more purple-like ink will be okay for my fountain pen? Or will they disqualify it? We actually thought about that, my wife and I, when I signed it. They'll do anything to disqualify a ballot. The people who yell voter suppression don't seem to be all that concerned with regard to voter suppression and the recall. This man has ruined so many people's lives in the state of California that he holds a somewhat unique spot in American history as utterly destructive. So with the LA Times. These are forces of bad. They're forces of destruction. The LA Times defended Gascon, the district attorney of Los Angeles County. Not only endorsed, they're defending his policies. It's one thing they could endorse him because they'll always endorse a leftist, but now that they see what he's doing, do you know that other counties are not even referring cases to Los Angeles County? Because he has a soft spot, this George Soros-funded, truly evil man, has a soft spot for murderers because... They don't care. You understand? The left doesn't care if you've murdered or if you've raped, if you've sold enough drugs to kill a village. They care about your color. Do you understand the utter inversion of moral principles that takes place on the left? I judge you by your color, not by your deeds. This is considered, there are two groups that do this, the left, like Soros and Gascon, and the LA Times, and the Ku Klux Klan. They judge people by their color, not by their deeds. Tell me if I have in any way exaggerated, in any way, shape, or form. It proves, as does so much else, like men give birth, men menstruate, it proves that if anything that is repeated enough, a half the population will succumb to. It's not a cheerful thought, but you have it in your hands to fight. You know, I'm ambivalent now. I've gone from opposed to ambivalent about the schools opening. My contempt for most teachers in the big cities of this country is very sad. It's the last group I ever wanted to hold in contempt. But their disinterest in the welfare of students is mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. It shows you how left corrupts everything it touches, that teachers don't care about the well-being of students. And why am I now ambivalent? Here it goes. Because the longer there is no school, the more people will take their children out of school permanently, which you have to do anyway, because your schools do not teach your children, they indoctrinate your children. Ask your high school student. High school. I probably knew this in fifth grade, but ask your high school student the following question. How many branches of government are there, and name them? Right? What do you think do you think that most high schoolers in big cities, not in Kenosha, Wisconsin, do you think that they would have an answer to that? I don't. Obviously, that's why I'm raising the question. I mean, don't ask tricky ones like how many people did communism kill? Or for that matter, increasingly, what was the Holocaust? So you wonder at a given point, what do they learn? And the answer is, they learn how bad America is. 1-8-PRAGER-776. See that? There is a silver lining in the non-opening of schools. Maybe it will awaken people to the fact that teachers, for the most part, having gone through a left-wing indoctrination in order to be a teacher, don't care about your kids. That's really an important revelation. Deeply sad. I was of the generation where the teacher was right no matter what. One of my teachers in eighth grade, so annoyed that I kept talking in class, he threw me over a desk. And if I tell that to kids today, they go, "What did your father say?" To which my response has been, "You got to be kidding. If I'd have told my father the teacher threw me over the desk, my father would have thrown me over a desk. Teacher was always right." There was no higher status in our home than teacher. And the left has now made that profession awful. In the most narcissistic statement you could probably make, don't trust anyone over 30. They were announcing that we are the wisest humans who have ever lived, and they still believe it.
It's astonishing. And it was all the more annoying then because it went hand in hand with the boomer worship of youth. They thought that
you knew more
and understood more before you had any firsthand experience of how the world actually works, which to me sounds pretty backwards.
That's exactly right. That's what and my antidote, I was vaccinated against the boomer thinking by religion. Because if you take your religion seriously, you know that you trust people over 30. In fact, the people I most trusted were over 2,000. So it struck me as bizarre. Then did you ever come across "I'm okay, you're okay"?
Good heavens!
That's another. So I added this description: "I'm okay, you're okay, America stinks."
That sums it up pretty neatly. Of course, that slogan never held much attraction for me, because I know I'm not okay. I need to get better, and I'm trying to get better every day.
Do you come from a religious background?
I do. I am an Orthodox Christian. I attend a Russian church.
Yeah, you see, it doesn't surprise me. You wrote a very wonderful book, Boomers. It's up, folks. It's biographies of various leading boomers in there. The men and women who promised freedom and delivered disaster. Helen Andrews, I hope we speak again.
Thank you so much, Dennis. This was fun.
Good. Thank you. Not shocked that she came from a religious background. A hater who is a professor, not shocking. What is depressing to me as a Jew is that she's a professor in Jewish studies, but the left has deeply poisoned much of Jewish life as it has Christian life. This woman embodies the poison. I don't usually mention their names because that's my policy to attack the ideas, but it's so despicable, her hate of Christians and her lies, that it's worth mentioning. Rachel Mikva. She is completely invited onto the show, or anyone from the Chicago Theological Seminary, whatever that is. White Christian nationalism turned violent. That's the lie that printed in the USA Today, which deteriorates on a daily basis. Josh Hawley, she attacks. For what? You ready? I'm going to read the entire quote that makes him a white Christian nationalist violent purveyor. Ready? He once said in 2017 that their charge is to, quote, take the lordship of Christ, that message, into the public realm and to seek the obedience of the nations, of our nation, to influence our society, and even more than that, to transform our society to reflect the gospel truth and lordship of Jesus Christ. What's wrong with that? No, I can't even figure it out. I'll tell you the answer. She hates Christians. That's what it is. The woman is a bigot, like almost everyone on the left. They're filled with hate. Not liberals. Liberals are just weak. But leftists hate. To use that as an example, he would like the country to what? To transform our society to reflect the gospel truth and lordship of Jesus Christ? I'm a Jew, a practicing, believing Jew. I don't find anything problematic in that. I find something problematic in her hatred of them, of Hawley, and of what he said. Hawley is aware that not everyone will become Christian. Right? So what? But believes we should all live by his interpretation of Christian values. Doesn't Mikva believe we should all live in her interpretation of left-wing values? One of the amazing traits of the left is the non-self-awareness. These people, the narcissism is so deep on the left that they don't realize, well, isn't that how we think? We want you to live, what are the words that you use? Oh, in our interpretation of left-wing, of progressive values. So he would like us all to live by his interpretation of Christian values. I'll bet you his interpretation of Christian values is unbelievably similar to my interpretation of Jewish values. I'll bet you. The Lieutenant Governor of Texas, Dan Patrick, asserts that elected officials should look to Scripture when making policy. Quote, because every problem we have in America has a solution in the Bible. So where does she look for? I look for solutions in Scripture. It's why I'm working my tail off for years and years to write my commentary on the first five books of the Bible. I do believe there are more answers there than in Howard Zinn. There are more answers there than in the New York Times editorial page, but I'll bet she doesn't think that. Professor of Jewish Studies, that cracks me up. Boy, Dan Patrick, the chutzpah to think that we should look to Scripture when making policy. Ah, that is Christian white nationalism gone crazy. So the hate that they publish in USA Today on a regular basis from academics. In Taking America Back for God, Christian Nationalism in the United States, Andrew Whitehead, and what is Christian nationalism? What is it? Have you ever met a Christian nationalist? It doesn't even make sense, Christian nationalism, because Christianity is not a nationalist movement. Christianity is a religious movement. Okay, Christian nationalism. Andrew Whitehead and Samuel Perry define Christian nationalism as, quote, a collection of myths, traditions, symbols, narratives, and value systems that idealizes and advocates a fusion of Christianity with American civic life. It includes assumptions of nativism, white supremacy, patriarchy, and heteronormativity. Really? It includes white supremacy? Wow. God, I've been to Pastors in Pews conference. I somehow missed the white supremacy. Oh, and not to mention the number of black pastors there. They must have missed it too. What'd you say? God, it's mind-boggling. It's hatred. It's anti-Christian hatred. Bigots. I'm speaking to a hero. Courage is the most important trait in the human condition. He has it. Andy Ngo, NGO. His book tomorrow comes out. It's up at DennisPrager.com and, of course, at Amazon. No, well, not of course. Happily. Unmasked, Inside Antifa's Radical Plan to Destroy Democracy. During the break, Andy, I went to look up this, what happened in Olympia this weekend. So I got this headline from a local website, from a local station in Olympia, Washington. It's the capital of Washington, by the way, folks. 12 arrested in Olympia after occupying Red Lion Hotel near state capital. The first sentence is, a homeless activist group forcibly occupied the Red Lion Hotel in Olympia Sunday, forcing employees and guests of the hotel to shelter in place, police said. So they're identifying them as a homeless activist group, not as Antifa.
That's right. And this is what makes it so hard for people to understand the threat of the Antifa, is that the media, even when it's the affiliation is obvious, they won't report it out. But the most common thing is that they don't do any of the digging. So I looked into this organization, because it so-called organization, because it just formed literally days ago. And all the accounts on social media that were amplifying this planned occupation of the Red Lion Hotel were these Antifa accounts within the same networks. And I looked at some of the people who I could identify as being part of calling for people to come, and those who are in the area. And I saw that, well, you look at who they actually are. These are Antifa extremists, just rebranding themselves under a new name. And this is what I want people to take away from the book, is that to not get too fixed on what these militant organizations call themselves. It doesn't matter if they call themselves anti-fascist or housing rights advocacy group. If they are preaching for anarchist communism in the name of anti-fascism, that is an Antifa group. And so you look at that, and just to repeat what I said before the break, these extremists allegedly brought in hatchets, knives, and batons, and assaulted the Red Lion Hotel staff as they sieged it. This is something you would hear happening in Somalia, not America, but it happened, and it's not headline news. And we're not learning the true picture about who these extremists actually are.
Will the people who invaded this hotel, and I want people to understand two things. One, the terror that people would feel in a hotel with a violent mob attacking. Imagine you're a guest at a hotel, which is sort of a sanctuary. And the other is that there has been no publicity given. We hear about January 6th every day, all day, and this I'd never heard of, and I follow the news for a living. It is just one local TV station's website that has reported it. Unless I'm wrong, has it been nationally covered?
No, it hasn't. And you bring up this issue. This perception about the threat of the far right is overblown because the legacy press only focus on one side of the extremists and not the other. So people don't know about what Antifa are doing. People don't believe me when I say, oh, so what happened on Capitol Hill? So those people did that day in and day out in my city last year, and worse, they actually came with explosives. They came with power tools to try to cut down the barrier around the federal courthouse so that they could burn it down when the officers were inside there. They didn't believe me. This is what happened. I document this all in the book. This is contemporary far-left domestic terrorism, and it's not like this is unheard of in America. We've had now, going back to the 70s, many, many organizations and militant revolutionary leftists who have carried out targeted killings, robberies, bombings, etc. It's just that the media has now been so saturated by leftists that they obfuscate this history from our collective minds, and history that is playing out as well, they don't report, or they don't report fully.
Your city of Portland had these incredibly violent riots for half a year. I don't know the answer to this, so it's not provocative. I simply want to know, has anybody been arrested, tried, and convicted?
Convicted, I know that there's been maybe literally a handful, like less than 5 out of 1,000 cases who have taken some pleas, but their sentences have been things like probation. In terms of somebody sentenced to jail time for the acts of violent extremism, no. And that's this other issue that I document in the book. It's not just that the extremists are, that there are many of them in Antifa, it's that in some of these political left-wing monocultures, like Portland, like Seattle, the public have elected in prosecutors who will actually not prosecute left-wing extremists. So as soon as Portland's new district attorney came in last summer at the height of the riot, he announced that it would be his office's policy to not prosecute felony riot charges because he framed it as a matter of free speech. Antifa said that they're fighting for racial justice. So all these acts of extremism are being carried under the banner of things that sound noble, restorative justice, social justice, so on and so forth. I don't care what they call themselves. You look at their actions, they are burning down buildings. They're setting fires to buildings when people are inside. They're bringing weapons like knives and guns and a homemade incendiary devices. They've killed people. They killed somebody in Portland this summer. They hunted down a Trump supporter and shot him point blank before fleeing to Washington State. This is what they're doing. It's terrorism directly in front of us. They're not even hiding it. Lots of it is even being recorded on video. And yet people actually think that this is a good movement of anti-fascists fighting against the far right.
All right. I want to find out. We're going to speak again soon. I want to remind everybody that this true hero of our time, who's now fled this country, which make you cry, his book is up at DennisPrager.com, Unmasked.